Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, University of Illinois, Critical Conversations. Critical mass and free speech. Experts warn of campus pitfalls. This article is based out of Urbana and is written by Julie Worth. A noted constitutional scholar who will appear at the University of Illinois today says free speech conflicts on college campuses appear to have eased a bit this year, but underlying tensions continue. Jeffrey Stone, that's G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Stone, former provost and law dean at the University of Chicago and now an emeritus law professor there, will take part in a critical conversation on free speech with another staunch First Amendment advocate, Professor Irwin, E-R-W-I-N, Chemerinsky, C-H-E-M-E-R-I-N-S-K-Y, Chemerinsky, Dean of the University of California Berkeley School of Law. In 2017, the Berkeley campus was the site of several high-profile protests of outside conservative speakers. I would like to think last year was kind of the peak, Stone said in a phone interview Monday. Maybe they're just not getting as much coverage. It's still a real issue. He cited the case last week of a conservative South Texas law school professor whose speech was interrupted by student protesters at the City University of New York. Stone said the rancor of the 2016 presidential election and its aftermath may have been a factor last year, but the free speech issue has been on the rise for the past 5 years. He attributed it to a combination of factors, including social media. Part of it is a generational thing, he said, with students unaccustomed to challenges their parents may have faced. Social media, meanwhile, fosters much more pervasive hateful speech than used to be the case, he said. When I grew up, you didn't really encounter this kind of speech very often at all. Mainstream media would never print or broadcast it in any way, he said. And college campuses are more diverse, with students from underrepresented minorities feeling comfortable speaking out against quote-unquote hate speech. It's given them more of a critical mass to express things they would not have expressed in the past because they thought they would be dismissed out of hand, he said. There's also been a tendency over the last couple of years by conservative students to invite provocateurs, to campus just for the sake of causing a ruckus, he said. There's arguably a reason to want to hear what people like Milo Yiannopoulos or Ann Coulter or Richard Spencer have to say. But the people inviting them are less interested in hearing what they have to say than they are making an issue and creating confrontation, Stone said. In that sense, they've been less sensitive to the ugliness of what they're doing than they might have been in the past. Power of censorship. Stone said both sides should be able to make the case for or against a speaker, but asking a university to ban someone is an illegitimate and unwise position because it's a two-edged sword, quote-unquote. Left-leaning students or faculty members may feel safe demanding that conservative speakers be silenced because they're in the majority on campuses, he said. They think it won't come back and bite them. They may not know enough about history to know that universities used to ban communists and used to ban people who criticized the war, Stone said. Giving the power to censor is not something you get to control forever. And in a larger world, what that is not like the culture at most universities, he said. If you legitimize the power of censorship, that's going to disadvantage, not advantage you. Stone chaired a committee in 2014 asked to draft a statement on freedom of expression for the University of Chicago, which has since been adopted by dozens of other schools. Although members of the university community are free to criticize and contest the views expressed on campus, and to criticize and contest speakers who are invited to express their views on campus, they may not obstruct or otherwise interfere with the freedom of others to express views they reject, or even loathe, it read. Stone later famously declined an offer by white supremacist Richard Spencer to speak at the University of Chicago and made public his email exchange with Spencer. If Richard Spencer says to me, "You should invite me," I can say, "I don't have any interest in hearing what you have to say," Stone said Monday. But he said he would defend Spencer's right to speak if someone else invited him to campus. Like Stone, Chemerinsky opposes the heckler's veto of controversial speakers and says campuses must be places where all ideas are expressed. He has argued that the current generation of college students is the first to be taught from a young age that bullying is wrong, and many are trying to protect other students from hate speech in order to create an inclusive community. But the law is clear that hate speech is protected by the Constitution, he said in a New York Times interview last fall. Every campus hate speech code that's been challenged in court has been ruled unconstitutional. Clinton-Obama connections. Chemerinsky said campuses can denounce hate speech, offer support for students targeted, take steps to prevent violence, shut down speech that is truly a threat, and place restrictions on the time, place, and manner of speech. And students can hold counter-demonstrations, but they can't stop someone from speaking. Chemerinsky, an expert on constitutional law, was founding dean of the University of California Irvine School of Law before taking the helm at the Berkeley Law School in 2017. He has authored 10 books, including Free Speech on Campus, from 2017, with Howard Gilman, G-I-L-L-M-A-N. He also writes a weekly column for the Sacramento Bee and frequent op-eds in newspapers across the country. He's also been a frequent critic of President Donald Trump's attack on the press and alleged violation of constitutional provisions barring him from receiving payments from foreign governments. Stone joined the University of Chicago Law Faculty in 1973 after serving as a law clerk to Supreme Court Justice William Brennan. He has authored numerous books on constitutional law, including several on free speech and Top Secret, When Our Government Keeps Us in the Dark, published in 2007. Stone was later appointed by President Barack Obama to serve on the President's Review Group on Intelligence and Communications Technologies, which evaluated the government's foreign intelligence surveillance programs in the wake of Edward Snowden's leaks. He was also one of the lawyers who represented President Bill Clinton in the Supreme Court in Clinton v. Jones. Today's event will be moderated by U of I College of Law Dean Vikram Amar, A-M-A-R, who is also a constitutional scholar, and led a task force that drew up a statement on free speech for the U of I. He said both speakers are longtime friends. The next headline reads, Weapons Charges, Mosque Bombing Case to be Delayed, Machine Gun Trial to Go First. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Urbana. Federal prosecutors in Urbana will try their case against four Ford County men before prosecutors in Minnesota proceed with their case against three of the men accused of bombing a mosque there, a judge ruled on Monday. Both prosecutors and defense attorneys had asked for a 60-day delay in the Minnesota case. In Illinois, Michael Hari, H-A-R-I, 47, Joe Morris, 22, Michael McWhorter, that's M-C-W-H-O-R-T-E-R, age 29, and Ellis Mack, 18, all of Clarence, have been indicted for possession of a machine gun. In Minnesota, the three older men have been charged with bombing the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center. That's D-A-R, separate word A-L, dash F-A-R-O-O-Q. Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center last August, and an indictment needed to be filed by April 25th. Based on the agreement by the parties and the defendant's consent, the court also finds that the ends of justice served by granting the parties joint motion outweigh the best interests of the public and the defendants in a speedy trial, wrote Magistrate Judge Franklin Knoll of the U.S. District Court in Minnesota. With the judge's order, prosecutors now have until June 22nd after the Urbana trial, scheduled to begin on June 5th. The attorneys for both sides said a delay in the Minnesota case would serve the interests of the defendants, the public, and justice. In addition, an extension will promote judicial economy. Due to the complexity of the cases pending in each district, the distance between counsel and their clients, and the understanding that the defendants will not be brought to Minnesota until the Central District of Illinois cases are resolved, the parties seek an additional 60-day extension, the attorneys wrote in a joint motion. The four men were arrested in Illinois last month on machine gun possession charges. If convicted on this charge, they each face up to 10 years in prison and a maximum $250,000 fine. They're believed by authorities to be part of a homegrown domestic terrorism group led by Hari, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff. They're also suspected in the attempted bombing in November of a women's health clinic in Champaign, but haven't been charged in that case. The four men remain in custody. Now let's take a moment to look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulje, S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Today, 53 degrees, partly cloudy skies, winds west-northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Overnight, partly cloudy, winds east-northeast at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 59, the low will be 35, cloudy and becoming windy, southeast winds shifting to west at 25 to 35 miles per hour, overnight cloudy, gusty winds early. On Thursday, the high will be 50, the low will be 30, cloudy, winds north-northwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour, and overnight partly cloudy skies with winds north coming from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, the high will be 58, the low will be 34, sunny, winds northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly clear skies, winds northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, high will be 58, the low will be 40, mainly cloudy, winds east at 10 to 15 miles per hour. And overnight, cloudy, winds east-northeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. The next headline reads, 6th Street Development Plans, Making New Room? Question mark. The future of several businesses uncertain amid talks of a new 17-story high-rise. This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Champaign. Yet another high-rise could be coming to Campus Town. A Chicago-based firm called CORE, that's C-O-R-E, CORE, that specializes in college town developments, is planning a 17-story, 175-foot-tall mixed-use project along the east side of 6th Street, where the Clybourne and Firehouse bars are located, according to Champaign City Council documents for tonight's meeting. The ground floor would contain commercial uses with upper floor residential. The project site would occupy approximately 260 feet of 6th Street frontage from Green Street to the south, wrote T.J. Blakeman, the city's senior planner for economic development. CORE Director of Acquisitions Tom Harrington Jr. declined to comment on the potential development when contacted Monday by the News Gazette. It's unclear what this means for the Clybourne and Firehouse, located at 706 and 708 South 6th Street. The owner of the bars, Scott Cochran, C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E, also declined comment. NITA, that's N-I-T-A, Tanchao, the wife of the owner of Hometown Pantry at 601 East Green Street, said they'll have to close and aren't sure if or where they'll move. They haven't yet sold their property to CORE, but plan to whenever they are ready. The City Council is voting tonight on two items related to the development and the alley just north of the Clybourne. The first would allow the city to acquire the alley by eminent domain, since its ownership has long been in question, Blakeman wrote. At some point, the lot was marked on official parcel maps as right-of-way, which is still the case today in county records, Blakeman wrote. However, no clear title or dedication to the city can be found. The second would allow the city to make an agreement with CORE to improve the alley at its own cost, including widening it from 10 feet to 20 feet. The developer's land options on the parcels to the north and is purchasing the property south of the alley, Blakeman wrote. The developers have requested a license agreement from the city to grant them access rights to build the structure above and parking below the alley in exchange for the dedication of 10 additional feet of right-of-way to better facilitate the public needs, including garbage collection and public safety access. Right now, some fire trucks and all garbage trucks can't fit down the alley. Because of this, all dumpsters and totes must be manually brought onto 6th Street for collection and returned in a reasonable hour, Blakeman wrote. This additional work causes many problems, including their unsightly appearance, smell, and leaking material throughout the day when tenants do not move them back promptly. The alley was paved after the city reached a cost-sharing agreement with property owners in 2006, but it was never widened. The items are up for a vote today, in part because the developer has land options that expire in the next month, Blakeman wrote. Failure to approve these council bills may negatively impact the developer's property acquisition for the project. Blakeman said he didn't have any details about the potential project beyond what is in the council documents. We do not have plans or a building permit in for the project, he said. They're still basically contemplating the project and couldn't move forward without having this step clarified. The property north of the alley was last used by the University of Illinois, but now appears to be vacant. District 1 Councilwoman Clarissa Nickerson Foreman, whose district would include this high-rise, said she was unaware of the development. This is the first time I've seen this, she said. At-large Councilman Tom Bruno said he'll vote to approve the two measures. I think it will be a non-controversial item, he said. While he declined to comment on this particular potential development, he said, I think it's always a sign we're doing things right when outside investors wish to spend tens of millions of dollars in our community. and the flood control efforts that we made in Campustown more than 10 years ago now are showing their benefits, Bruno said. The next headline reads, Ebertfest, not just the Dudenator. Inspiration for Lebowski says Ebert was critic with positive impact. This article is written by Paul Wood and is based out of Champaign. Jeff Dowd, that's J-E-F-F, last name Dowd, D-O-W-D, is the inspiration for the Dude in the Coen brothers' The Big Lebowski, friends since their first film, Blood Simple. They even call him Dudenator. He's been an exhibitor, marketing genius, an advisor of sorts to directors, and helped found the Sundance Film Festival as well as being a political activist. He'll be in Champaign-Urbana Saturday for Ebertfest's 20s showing of The Big Lebowski, and we'll have more on that later. But first off, the Dude wanted to say a few words about his friend, an advocate for that first Coen brothers film. Roger Ebert was different from other critics, Dowd said. Roger was very, very proactive, and he understood the positive nature of what a single critic could make in terms of launching a film or launching a career, and he did that many, many, many times, Dowd said in his gravelly voice. The critic could lead the parade for films with a very strong word of mouth that might need a helping hand, Dowd said. As independent filmmakers like Joel and Ethan Coen, Martin Scorsese, and John Sayles tried to get their films out at events like the Sundance Film Festival, their films weren't exactly Superman 3. It would have been a hugely different film world without Roger, and there are many films people might have never heard of, Dowd said. They not only saw the light of the day, but they were extremely successful through Ebert and bridge builders like those at film festivals. He also said Chaz Ebert, who'll be back as host Wednesday at the Virginia Theater, has played an important role in the film world. They were inseparable, Dowd said. They were separable at Sundance. Chaz didn't like the weather that much at Sundance. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Judah Christian's Kim Dillman, D-I-L-L-M-A-N, a talented senior who is headed to Ball State in the fall. The salutatorian of a 17-member class is finishing off a long run at Judah, where she enrolled in preschool and stayed put. In a way, I'm excited to leave in the best way that can sound, she said. At the same time, I'm kind of scared because there are big changes ahead. On Thursday, Dillman will take us behind the scenes when she takes over our Snapchat account. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. What will we learn about the school on Prospect Avenue in Champaign? A lot of people think Judah is extremely different, but that's not the case, she said. We're very similar to other schools. That might be a big shock to people. Online audience. What was trending last week at NewsGazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,179,410 page views. The three top stories. 1. Champagne restaurant owner arrested in stolen property case. 2. Teen charged as adult in Farmer City shooting. And 3. Suspect identified in armed robbery at Champagne Subway. The three top sports stories were 1. Fink cuts list to 5. 2. A reason for optimism. And 3. Smith transfers to Missouri. The three top videos were 1. Underwood. It's not just to go out and find a piece. 2. Crime Stoppers. Kohl's shoplifting. And 3. Smith. Get back on top. The three top photo galleries were 1. The 96th annual Fighting Illini Men's Basketball Banquet. 2. Coaches vs. Cancer 2018. And 3. All-Star High School Basketball. In history, in 1918, Captain Thomas J. Smith, who served in the Civil War, practiced law in Champaign County after the war. He was elected a University of Illinois trustee in 1908 and donated the School of Music building to the university in honor of his wife, who has died. He was 75 years old. He was named a captain in the Union Army before the Battle of Chickamauga. In 1968, action on a resolution banning draft card burners from the University of Illinois campus was tabled by the General Policy Committee of the U of I Board of Trustees. State Superintendent of Instruction Ray Page, P-A-G-E, had introduced the resolution. In 2003, former Governor Jim Edgar confirmed that he had been contacted by the White House about a possible run for the U.S. Senate. But Edgar also said he had made no decision. He was at the University of Illinois Institution of Government and Public Affairs, where he had organized a roundtable discussion for students with Attorney General Lisa Madigan. Following the discussion, Edgar said that White House officials had called him to talk about a possible run for the Senate to replace Senator Peter Fitzgerald, who had announced he would not seek re-election in 2004. And now to quickly follow up on our critical conversation headline from the very beginning of this piece, I just wanted to say here's some information about when that critical conversation will take place. Free speech on campus. What? Second in a series of critical conversations at the U of I open to the public. Who? First Amendment scholars Erwin Chemerinsky, Dean of the Cal Berkeley School of Law, and Jeffrey Stone, Emeritus Law Professor and former Law Dean and Provost at the University of Chicago. So when is this? Noon to 1 p.m. today. That's Tuesday, April 17th. And where? It will take place at the Colwell Playhouse at the Craner Center for the Performing Arts, located at 500 South Goodwin Avenue in Urbana. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, Health Clinic Gets Go-Ahead. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. The City Council on Monday approved the launch of a new medical clinic for primary care on an outpatient basis. The clinic, operated by OSF Healthcare at 520 North Cunningham Avenue, needed a special use permit from the city, which is what the council approved, to legally open in its zoning district. This facility, which will be near the recently renamed OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, joins OSF's 13 prompt care centers for convenient care in Illinois. OSF spokeswoman Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-I, Dankoff, D-A-N-K-O-F-F, said Monday that more information is forthcoming on specific services that the clinic will provide. The lot that the future clinic will sit on is about 0.44 acres and approximately 3,250 square feet as defined by the city's zoning ordinance, according to a city council report. It's at the intersection of North Cunningham Avenue and East Park Street, with a Walgreens pharmacy to the south. Spaces for 13 off-street clinic parking spaces will be required by the zoning ordinance. In other business, the city council also voted Monday to allocate its $4,331,250 private activity bond cap for 2018. It decided to equally split the money between its Mortgage Credit Certificate 2018 program and the Eastern Illinois Economic Development Authority. The EIEDA, again, Eastern Illinois Economic Development Authority, will use the funds for possible neighborhood initiatives in the community, such as multifamily affordable housing developments, according to a city council report. The mortgage credit program is federally authorized and allows home buyers to qualify for a federal income tax credit equal to a percentage of the interest paid on their home loan each year, according to the report. The next headline reads, Outdoor Advertising Association, Billboards Donated to Promote Helpline. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. An advertising group in Illinois is providing free advertising space statewide to help promote a new helpline for those struggling with opioids and other substance abuse. A statement from the state's Department of Human Services says the Outdoor Advertising Association of Illinois has donated some 100 billboards. They will advertise the helpline that offers treatment information for anyone who has questions about opioids and other substances. Several large billboards will appear on tollways. The Illinois Department of Human Services launched the helpline in December. It is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's also free and confidential. The number for the helpline is 1-833-2-FIND-HELP. It doesn't tell me what those numbers are, but again, 1-833-2-FIND-HELP, F-I-N-D-H-E-L-P. It's funded by federal grant money. The next headline reads, Road Conditions, Monday's Snowy Weather Cause of Fatal Crash. This article is written by Tim Dittman and is based out of Mahomet. The Champaign County Sheriff's Office said a slick road caused by Monday morning's snowy weather is to blame for a fatal crash in Hensley Township east of Mahomet. Lieutenant Brian Menenga, M-E-N-N-E-N-G-A, said about 9 a.m., Heather Clark, 19, of Mahomet, was driving east on County Road 2175 North near County Road 650 East when she lost control, left the road to the south, went through a ditch, and struck a tree. The Champaign County Coroner's Office pronounced Ms. Clark dead at the scene. An autopsy was scheduled for Monday afternoon. Menenga said there are no signs that Ms. Clark was distracted. The next headline reads, Bicentennial Farm Designation. Family receives state's first honor. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Springfield. A family that has farmed in southern Illinois for five generations has received the state's first bicentennial farm designation. Gerald and Betty Brown of Jonesboro were presented with the honor last week at the Illinois Capitol. The Bicentennial Farm Designation is part of Illinois' 200th birthday celebration. It recognizes farms that have been held by descendants of the same family for at least 200 years. The next headline reads, Board to Hear Public's Thoughts on Budget. This article is based out of Rantoul and is written by Dave Hinton for the Rantoul Press. The Village Board will hold a public meeting on Rantoul's proposed budget at 5:45 p.m. today at the Municipal Building, with a meeting to vote on the budget following, 15 minutes later. Rantoul's budget process has been one of the most difficult in recent years. At last week's monthly meeting, the board appeared to settle on a compromise plan that called for the laying off of only one part-time employee in the recreation office while retaining four full-time workers in central maintenance and laying off one in that department. Central maintenance repairs and maintains the village's 112 vehicle fleet. After village administrator Rick Snyder, S-N-I-D-E-R, presented three budget plans, the board appeared to settle on the second one, with the exception of laying off only one rec part-timer. The first called for the elimination of most central maintenance full-time and part-time personnel, as well as rec office part-timers. Snyder warned that the budget picture isn't going to get any better in future years. I think looking at next year, we're also going to have worse news, Snyder said. We know that Tax Increment Financing District 1 is going to be expiring. That currently contributes $260,000 a year to the general fund alone. It also contributes money to economic development and public works. The next headline reads, St. Joseph Village Board, Drivers to Feel a Change of Speed. This article is based out of St. Joseph and is written by Nora Mayberry Daniels for The Leader. Changes have come to some roads in the village. St. Joseph trustees voted to change the speed limit to all roads within the village to 25 miles per hour. The new law does not impact roads maintained by Champaign County or the state. The village board also voted to make the speed limit 15 miles per hour in alleys. Board member Jim Wagner said the decision was made with residents' well-being in mind. We want to make sure the children in the village are safe, he said. And around the area, fundraiser liquor license gets okay. Out of Gibson City, council members granted Mark, M-A-R-C, Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N, a one-night liquor license for a rescheduled Rotary Club fundraiser on May 4th at the Sand Trap. Peterson said the Libido Funk Circus Band will be performing. Beer will be sold indoors, but he said patrons would be able to carry alcohol outside in a fenced-in area. Out of Ludlow, new crosswalks are being installed on the main east-west street through town. Mayor Steve Thomas said Champaign County is having from a dozen to 15 of the crosswalks installed. Cross construction began the work last week. And out of Monticello, the $14.9 million wastewater treatment upgrade is going along very smoothly. Public Works Director Jim Grabarczyk, that's G-R-A-B-A-R-C-Z-Y-K, told City Alderman, "We haven't had any major hiccups, only minor stuff." The project, partially taken on to address violations issued by the Illinois EPA, should result in Monticello's new sewer plant being fully operational by early 2019. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been a reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. We'll resume with Part 2 of the News Gazette shortly, so please stay with us. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day.